Okay, hello, how are you? Trying to figure out the notes. Anyone on Zoom, notes are on the website, show website, under on the Pesach thing.
No, under learning
on the
special classes page, right at the top. This class is listed at the top of the special classes
page. Hear that, guys? Special classes page on the website. Is where the link to the notes are. So it's two or three pages.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, small print because I didn't want to make 10 pages. Okay, so. I'm very excited about the fact that the book is out this year, first time on Amazon.
Congratulations.
Thanks so much. There's a couple of additions to this. First printing came out in 2019. And I didn't really rush. I tried to get it out before Pesach. I'm glad I did because even though it wasn't complete the way I wanted it, it was getting it done was a great accomplishment. I was really happy about that. And then the next year, I added notes to the Haggadah, which is what I wanted to do because it's very hard to read an essay, long essay type of book, and then apply it to there. How it applies to the details of the Haggadah. So the last year's edition, I added in footnotes. It was a Haggadah in the back of the first edition, and then the second edition footnotes were put as like a commentary to the Haggadah itself, based on the book, and then I would explain which chapter, first chapter in the book that it went back to. This year I added questions, introductory questions, each chapter to make things clearer because it sort of focuses you, once you read these questions, on the issues that I'm going to deal with in the chapter. So I'm very, very happy about this new edition that has these notes to the Haggadah and also the questions, which I think are really great. Tonight I want to deal with, I want to give it an overview. If I gave a class on details of basically the book, I think it's really taking a month to go through it. But the book, I try to touch on the main points and show you that the Haggadah is nothing like you ever experienced before. So that's my goal. Show you that Haggadah is something that the meaning of Haggadah is not clear. But when you hopefully end this class, you see clearly that the Haggadah is an amazing book. And it's really more relevant than the front page of the newspaper, but more relevant than from the top story in the newspaper. You know, this is literally what it's about. You know, it's thinking the Haggadah, like the Rambam says that Chayav Maharos is also curious. That the person has to be shown that as if they left Egypt. We have to act on it now. But how do I mean? What does it mean to show that you left Egypt? Some people say you have to walk around the table. Some of the Sfarim have this custom with mats on your back and act out the execution. So I think that's very cute, but it's not really that effective. I think the point of the problem is saying is that we have to go through the same experiences that the Jews went through when they left Egypt. What does it mean? How that possible? That's what I'm going to show you tonight. How to go through that same experiences that Jewish people went through when they left Egypt today. Show you that that's what the Haggadah is trying to do. Bringing basic proof of the process of freedom that Jewish people went through. And it's relevant based on that. So, first point I want to make is that. So we say Manish, we say Manish, one of the most famous lines in the whole Haggadah is, why is it different than the other night? I think that there's a misconception of that, what that means. That's just saying, that the translation Manish, however, that is not, what why is it like different? Translation is, Mishtana means to change. In other words, what has changed? What difference does this night make? What difference does it make to me? How does it affect me as an individual? My perspective on life. Manashana, what has changed? It's a very big difference between that and why is that different? Is why are we acting different today? Why is what has changed means how is my life different? It's very different. It has to do with me, my experience. Same thing as you have to show that you leave Egypt, you have to go through an experience today. So that makes a difference to your life, changes your life. So basically, this the purpose of the state is to change your life and for the positive in an amazing, deep way. And that's what I'm going to show about tonight is how the Seder does that. So the first point I want to make is that there's a few elements in the Seder that are required according to the law. These points are not just random. We do a Gada like it's a mumble jumble. Basically, you look at the order of the Gada, it's called a Seder, called order. There's no order at all. It's all out of order. We talk about we say we welcome our people into our home. What does that mean? And then we say this year or here, next year in Israel. And then we say if this God didn't take the four questions. Why is this night different than the other night? Again, okay, that's nice. Let's tell the story of tell the story. We were slaves in Egypt, then we got out of Egypt. Okay, great. Let's go on. Let's hear the story. And it goes and God didn't take us out, then we would still be slaves in Egypt. Okay. The rabbis would stay up all night tell the story. And then there's the argument whether you have to say the remember the Exodus at night or in the day. Okay, tell me the story. The verse is not talking about Egypt, it's talking about the Exodus that's gonna be at the end of time. Okay, and then everyone has to view themselves if they left Egypt. Okay, I mean, just one stop. Our forefathers were idol worshippers. Okay, get to the point. Dainu, okay, finally, that Dainu. If God didn't let us out, then we go through this song quickly, and then it goes to the topic because God didn't give us the Torah about Sinai and going to Israel. And then we start going into all these, the whole thing's tangent after tangent after tangent. I mean, this has stood for us for centuries, and every generation wanted to destroy us, wanted to kill us. I mean, thank you. I mean, but tell me the story of the Exodus. Finally, say, 10 plagues. We rattle off the 10 plagues. That's great. And then we start saying, if you don't fulfill your obligation, if you don't say Pesach, Matzah, Marah, the Paschal Lamb, Matzah, and Marah. So we say all these symbols. And then we say, thank God for letting us out of Egypt. And it's open. I mean, that's it. We never told the story. So what exactly is the symbol moment? Basically, the Seder is about different obligations that we have to fulfill. And these obligations, each one of them, is very significant in its own right. It's trying to get something out of us. The first thing about the Seder is whoever more you say, the more praiseworthy it is. So one thing about the Seder is the idea is speech is very important. Speech is an absolute fundamental principle of the state. And we see this in many places. You look at the sources on page 1. So, I mean, my reading first four sources, the short version.
And that you may become in the hearing of your child and of your child's child. How I did the water in the and how I displayed my signs among them, in order that you may know that I am Exodus 27. You shall say, it is the possible sacrifice to Adonai to pass over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt when smiling the Egyptians that they rose the temple. And you shall explain to your child on that day, it is because of what Adonai did for me when I went free from Egypt. And when in time you come, a child of yours asks you, saying, what does this mean? You shall reply, it was with a mighty hand that Adonai brought us out of Egypt, the house of God.
See, the Torah, when it deals with the commandment to remember the Exodus, it tells you you have to tell each other, you have to speak. Another example is when Moshe was saying to God, I don't want to go on my mission. Jews, he says, I can't go because Lo-ish Dormir, okay? I can't speak. So God says, well, I can help you. But the bottom line is Moses said, I'm not qualified because I can't speak. You can't speak, then you're not qualified to deal with the Exodus of Egypt. The bread that we eat on Pesach and Matzah. So Matzah is called, as we say in the Seder, Halach Ma'anya. This is poor man's bread. The word Anya doubles as poor and also means speak, answer. So as the Gemara says, this is bread in which we speak over. That's why it's called Lechem Oni. It's called bread of affliction. Because the word affliction also means poor. It means speech and to answer. The place we left from Egypt, was the name for the city. It's called Piachiro, means the mouth of freedom. The place we went to after Egypt, right into what's called the Midbar, the Midbar of the desert. The Midbar in Hebrew doubles as the word, the shades of vowels, the Daber, speaker. The Halal Pesach, the Zohar says that it can be divided into two words, Peh, mouth, Sach, speaking mouth, Pesach. And, like I said, the Haggadah says, whoever speaks more, it's greater. So we see speech is a major aspect. Now, why is that? So the freedom of speech is a very big, major aspect of being an American. I think that's why we have an incredible ability to understand and appreciate Pesach more than any other generation in many ways. One reason is because we're used to the idea that your freedom of speech, they never had that in any society before. In the history of Jewish people, those things freedom of speech. We can't say anything more. Now we this is something we take for granted, and that's something that the Exodus emphasizes, that freedom of speech is a very important aspect of life. And indeed, if you look at the Rambam and over here, Rambam is on the second page. So Rambam would be so if you look at number in the second page, the first one, I don't know. This is Torah's repentance 5:1. So someone read that.
Every man is endowed with a free will. He desires to bend himself towards the good path and to be just. It is within the power of this man to reach out for him. And if he desires to bend himself to a bad path and to be wicked, it is within the power of his hand to reach out for it. This is now what is written in the Torah, saying, behold, the man is to become one of us, to know good and evil. That is as if saying, behold, the species man stands alone in the world, and there is no other kind like him as regards this subject of being able of his own accord, by his reason and thought, to know the good and the evil, and to do whatever his inclination dictates him, with none to save him from either doing good or evil, and being that he is so, lest he put forth his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live.
Rambam says the amazing thing. This species, man, stands alone in the world. I mean, the reason we're different from animals is because we have choice, we have freedom, we choose. And the Kabbalist, amazingly, I don't have it here, but Kabbalist says, what makes us different from animals? Speech. So basically, there's two things that make us different from animals: choice, speech, freedom of speech. So basically, the idea of freedom of speech makes man unique among all creatures. So the issue that Pesach deals with is freedom of speech, because this is the ability we have to create ourselves as individuals. The way we do that is by speaking. And there's a specific kind of speaking that needs to be done. So someone wants to read number first page again. The Rambam and Mishnah Torah 11 and Unleavened Bread 7:3. See that?
Yeah, sure.
on the first page it says Mishnah Torah 11 and 11.
On the first night of Pesach, I want you to introduce some change at the table so that the children will notice it may happen. Why is this night different from all other nights? And in turn, and he in turn will reply, this is what happened. And what man is going to do? Arch, rain, or nest of children. Move the table from the food plate. Snatch the unleavened bread from hand to hand, and so on. If he has no son, his wife should ask the question. If he has no wife, they should ask one another, why is this not different? Even if they are all scholars, if one is alone, he should ask himself, why?
See this amazing thing, basically saying, hey, so, how you doing? Why is this not different? I don't know. So the point is that you have to speak it, you have to ask, you have to ask. Questioning is a major aspect of the Seder. That's why we have four sons, four children, and that's why we have the Banach Seder. It's basically saying, fulfilling your obligation to ask questions. So the Gemara says that, by when he was a baby, his rabbi, I think, was his stepfather, and said they had a Seder, and they set the table and then they unset the table. So the rabbi says, "Why are you unsetting the table for?" So Rabbi says, "Great! Now we don't have to say manashtan." What does that mean? Tosus explains, basically saying the obligation is not to ask, say the liturgy manashtan. It's to create curiosity in children so they ask any question at all. So he asks the dad, "Why did you take the stuff on the table?" "Oh, great! Because I want you to ask a question." "People, why'd you do it?" "Because I wanted you to ask a question." Well, that's a circular reasoning. The answer is that basically what it's saying is the question itself is inherently important. Just ask questions, be inquisitive. That's what one of the things we train on children. Don't just accept things on because someone tells you. Ask about it. Be inquisitive. Try to understand things based on your ability to discern and understand things. Don't just accept things. Ask about it. This is who Abraham was. This is why Abraham is the most associated with Passover. And says in the sages because Abraham was a walking Passover, Seder. Because this is who he was. Look at number someone read the next one, please.
As soon as this giant was weaned, he commenced to busy his mind. In his infancy, he commenced to think by day and by night and would encounter the enigma.
See, this, by the way, this is about Abraham.
How is it possible that the planet should continuously be in motion and have no leader? And who, indeed, causes it to revolve, it being impossible that it should revolve itself? Moreover, he neither had a teacher nor one to impart thought to him. For he was sunk in earth from the Chaldeans among the foolish worshippers of stars, but his father and his mother, like all the people, worshipped stars, and he, although following them in their worship, busies his heart and reflects until he attains the path of truth. And by his correct thinking, he understands when he finally saw the line of righteousness. He knew that there is one God, creating everything.
It's amazing, Mama. Basically, Ram said, this is what God chose Abraham. Not because he was obedient, it's the opposite. He asked questions. He just didn't accept anything the way it was. If it doesn't make sense, then I want no. And the more questions you ask, the better. This is the idea of obligation. Sheila is asking questions. That's one of the obligations of the faith. That's just to talk. So it's to ask questions to find out what's going on. That's why I believe Haggadah is so incomprehensible because the thieves are going to just do this ritual. They want you to try to figure it out. What's going on? That's what we're doing tonight. We're showing that Seder is there to get you to think, to ask questions, to try to be inquisitive, try to understand stuff. And one of the obligations to realize is just to ask the question. You don't have to have an answer. Just, because if you're that kind of person who asks questions, you're going to get someone. Like, remember the quote to the beginning of this I have in the book are just amazing. Like, basically, said, like successful people, Tony Robbins says, successful people ask the right ask questions and. More questions they ask, the better answers they get. Which is basically the idea that the more inquisitive you are, the more successful you can be in life. There's a Jewish version, like they say, Jews answer a question by asking another question. That's exactly what Jews are. We get that from Abraham. And that's what Satan's trying to do. First thing Satan's trying to do is speech through questioning. Because questioning enables us to discover things that we never would have discovered. It enables us to engage in life like we never engage. You do better on tests. There's studies that said you ask questions, and not just memorize. You ask questions. I used to when I studied for I just realized the way I memorize a ton of information is to list questions and answers of like what material I want to memorize. And eventually, I was able to go through really quickly and memorize an unbelievable amount of material because I mean, you need to know that when I'm sitting in front of the rabbi, he really grills you and he asks you all these deep questions. Based on it's not just what you learn, it's implications of what you learn. You can't understand the implications unless you really understand it between well in the way I figured out how to do this. And I learned this literally from studying about Haggadah, is that asking questions was the best group for me to memorize amounts of information. Because when you do that, you're much more actively involved in the study. And that's why the most important thing in yeshiva always is that, no matter what yeshiva, from the history of being a Jewish people, the most important thing is who asked the best question, not who has the best answers. That's what elevates someone to the highest level. You ask the best question. The question is a lesson learned from the same type of speeches in French. The question is also vitally important for the accomplishment of the Seder, what we need to accomplish the Seder. Now, the question then becomes, what is questioning bring out during the Seder? So what question brings out during the Seder, besides all these other benefits, is that it brings out what's known as this distinction of the law, which is division of things. Being able to make distinctions in life. So if we ask questions that we basically, for instance, ask questions about, someone asks you questions about you, so you make yourself distinct, you make yourself unique, you make yourself special, you make yourself, it shows, who am I? Based on the question someone asked me, I'm able to develop an individual that is unique in their own way, based on the way I answer those questions. So the method that the Haggadah uses, something called contrast. Contrast means the way we're different from everybody else is determines who I am. I'm different from you in this way. That defines me. So the sermon basically is contrast is a tremendous tool to self-development. And that's why the main thing that we do with the Seder is contrast. Someone read number, that's Pesachim
116a. The father begins his answer with disgrace and concludes with glory. Kabbalah asks, what is the meaning of the term disgrace? Rav said that once you begin by saying, first, our forefathers were idol worshippers, before concluding with words of glory. And Shmuel says, the disgrace with which one should begin his answer is, we were slaves.
Okay, so what this is saying is, there's two different ways, and this is what the structure of the Haggadah is. There's two different ways of contrast. One's Rav, Shmuel says that we were slaves in Egypt, and we were free. That's simple. That's everyone knows. We were slaves in Egypt, God took us out. That's physical freedom. In this, there's Rav's worship. We were first idol worshippers, then God brought us to that's spiritual freedom. There's two different freedoms that we deal with in the Seder that make up the backbone of the Seder. Let's understand the structure of the Seder. There's the physical freedom from Egypt and the spiritual freedom. Those are the two aspects. So that's why the Seder deals with two. Everything before we eat, there's two of everything. There's two cups of wine. There's two washing our hands. There's two eating vegetables. Or Karpas and Mara. There's two matzah rituals where we break the matzah and we eat the matzah. There's two questions, Sheila, four sons and a Manish son. There's two. Two different contrasts. Basically, the structure of the Haggadah, therefore, is the first we start with Shmuel's Haggadah, which is God took us out of Egypt. We're slaves in Egypt. God took us out. That's one. And then we have all the rituals around that, which is wine, washing, vegetable mara, in question. Shayla, question. So that's the Manish Tana. That's the first version of the Haggadah, the first vision of the Haggadah. Second vision, and then we say our forefathers were slaves in Egypt. We're idol worshipers. Then basically he took us out of Egypt. He gave us the Torah, made us close to the service of God. So basically he took us away from idol worship and brought us to service of God. Then we have the end of the Seder, which is corresponds to this is wine and the washing and the pastor. That's why we have the questions also after that declaration that we are worshiping. So basically those are two aspects that create the structure of the Seder. The Rami says that the way we fulfill this is through what's called the Rami Ovidavi. Rami Ovidavi is a strange from Deuteronomy, which is the main, he says is the main section of the Haggadah, which is telling the story, which is a very short story, but it tells the story by saying that our forefathers were idol worshippers. Rami Ovidavi literally means that my father was a lost Aramean. So what that it could be interpreted as my forefather, my great grandfather, Terah, Abraham's father was an idol worshiper. Then it says that God took us down to Egypt, and then we were slaves there for many years. Then he took us out and brought us to Israel. So this declaration that we say, use this declaration, the Torah says, Deuteronomy, that we bring the first fruits on Shavuot, the holiday of Shavuot, bring these first fruits to Jerusalem, and say the first fruits ritual. That we acknowledge that God took us out of Egypt. We were idol worshippers, took us out of Egypt, and then he brought us to Israel. Those are basically 3 points. We slaves them, we left us out of Egypt, and we brought us to Israel. And we acknowledge that he fulfilled his obligation and brought us to Israel. So that declaration is a very strange thing to use for the telling of the story, but that's what we use to tell the story. It's the Quran. We should use the Exodus of verses to tell us that. But we don't use this obscure methodology, this obscure section of Torah to tell us that. We'll see why we use that section. That section starts off by saying that our forefathers were idol worshippers. Then God basically brought us to Israel through Egypt, through the means of Egypt. So we'll see what the significance of that in a minute. So first we'll deal with physical freedom. Physical freedom has to do with the accepting my origins, accepting who I am. Harakat Tov usually is gratitude. It doesn't really mean gratitude. It's an example of Harakat Tov, honoring your parents. Why do we honor our parents? Even if you like your parents, you have to honor them. So many people have a problem with this. I don't have to honor this jerk. Who gave me terrible upbringing. I don't like him. So if a person's evil, so it's one thing. But a person's not evil, you just don't like him. So why should I acknowledge it? Why should I give them honor? They're a bozo. They're a bum parent. I don't like them. So the answer is because you have no choice. Because this is who you are. I always use the example, I use the book for this television show called Runaways. Runaways is a very interesting show. When I saw this tagline, I was like, wow. Basically, it's about superhero kids who have evil superhero parents. They don't know they're superheroes. They find out, they know their parents are superheroes. And the story goes on the show that they learn about their own superpowers. Then they realize that their parents also have superpowers, but they're evil. Basically, they're like the Joker and the Penguin, all these evil people, from Batman, Lex Luthor, all these evil people in the comics books. So this is who their parents are. So there's a great tale. I was like, this is perfect for this when I heard this. It was a trailer for one of the new season that says you can't know who you are until you know what you are. I was like, wow, that's very deep. They said, you can't become yourself, know who you are. I mean, what kind of person you want to become. So you first acknowledge where you come from, what your origin is. That's why honoring your parents is on the right side of the Ten Commandments. The right side is with God and man. God and man. The left side deals with man and man. So don't murder, don't steal. That's on the adultery. That's on the left side. That's between man and man. first line says, observe the Sabbath. God is a Lord of God took you out of Egypt and created the world so out of Egypt. And you shouldn't have idols. You shouldn't falsely in my name. Sabbath and then honor your parents. What's honoring parents? Like what doesn't fit? Where's Waldo? What doesn't fit in this group? Honoring parents is between man and man. Why is it between man and God? This reason doesn't do your parents. Honoring parents doesn't do that man's with you. You have to honor yourself. But honor yourself is this is where I come from. You're never gonna become yourself if you're gonna find your parents your whole life. You're gonna basically saying, I want to be the opposite of my parents, which is gonna make 100% sure that your parents are gonna define you. Because your parents, if you don't acknowledge that your parents are your parents, and that's who you come from, then you're just going to fight them your whole life. You're going to basically let them control you, even though you want the opposite. The only way you get rid of your parents is to acknowledge that they are your DNA. Whether you like it or not, you can't change it. So just accept. That's an amazing concept. It's the idea that accepting my past, accepting where I am right now, is the key to you can't be free. And the reason for this is, it says that in the Megillah, says, God doesn't create a problem without you. Here it is. If you want to read number 13, Megillah 13b in the second page. Rav explains it's special. Megillah 13b.
Holy One, blessed be He, who will not be right with people unless He has already created a remedy for them beforehand, as it is stated, that wouldn't be able to do iniquity or crime for the public. But this is not so regard to the nation of the world. With that, God first strikes them, and only afterward does He create a remedy, as it is stated, and the Lord shall.
So forget about the second part. The first part is what it says that Jewish people, God creates the remedy before the disease. This is an incredible thing. They said this is what the whole story of Exodus Egypt is telling us this point. That's why it says, I toyed with you. Everything's a game for God. The whole thing, look at the whole story, so many examples of basically He's toying with them, He's playing around with them. So why is He doing that? It's like cruel. Just let him out of Egypt. Because the point isn't that God is Superman saving Lois Lane trying to get us out of Egypt. The point is God's teaching us a lesson of freedom. Lesson of freedom is don't think your problems are chaining you to anything. The problem has a solution embedded inside of it. You have to just look for the problem, look for the solution. The problem itself is has an answer before it even started from the beginning. So basically, what it's saying, the main thing, basically saying, you have to accept things, your problems as they are, not because you have to be a masochist. You have to accept the problems you have because realize that the problems are only there to bring out solutions. If someone has an attitude, the freedom level goes up to the roof. Basically saying that I'm not enslaved by my problem. I can look for solutions and better problems. The only way you could do that is if you believe that everything's meant to be. Everything's from the beginning of creation. So, creation. This is what number next source. So Exodus 12:42. This is about the Exodus from Egypt, and it frames it in a very specific way. Now, when we
and then you may be found in the hearing of your child and your child's child.
Actually, you can read that's fine. That's fine. That's okay. It's okay. You can read that. That has to do with
how I made a mockery of the Egyptians and how I displayed my signs among them in order that you may know that I am.
This is what I said before. You made a mockery. Why is God making a mockery of Egypt? So if you look at number, the next one after Megillah, the 1242.
That was for Hashem, the third night. Out of the land of Egypt. That same night is Hashem, one of vigil for all the children of Israel throughout the ages.
This has to do with being a guardian knight. So the next source, I'm going to read that one. So it explains what it means, a guardian knight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. It was also taught in the Baraita. Rabbi Yehoshua said, in Nisan, our forefathers who did from Egypt. And in Nisan, in the future, the Jewish will be redeemed in the final redemption. This teaches that the night of Passover is a night that has been continuously watched, that is, set aside for the purpose of redemption from the 6 days of creation, and it will continue to
basically what they're saying is that Exodus of Egypt was ordained from the beginning of time. So what God is telling us is it's a joke. You don't have to worry about whether you're getting it out of Egypt. You're going to get out of Egypt. It's guaranteed, 100% guaranteed. It's embedded in creation. It's definitely going to happen. So a person has that attitude, they realize the solution is going to be there. So I don't have to worry about this, the problem that my stuff being saved from a problem. The point of the Exodus is not that God's saving us, because God's saving us, he can let us out one second. We have to go through this process in which we understand that every one of our problems is really there to help bring out a solution, that we have to go through that experience in order for us to appreciate what we need to appreciate from the experience, but not that we need to be saved from our problems. It's a very empowering attitude. Basically, it enables a person to become individual. That's the whole purpose of this, that the problems we go through in life are not just to solve these, because solve the problems that we go through in life is in us, in order for us to become ourselves, unique individuals. And that's what robs supposed high point. We were slaves in Egypt because we had the attitude of Pharaoh. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. Pharaoh was a person that did not acknowledge where he comes from. And if you look at Mishnah Torah, the next source.
It is therefore written in the Torah, and I will pardon Pharaoh's heart, because at the beginning he sinned of his own free will and meted out evil to Israel who sowed in this land, even after this death. Come, let us deal wisely with them. Thereafter justice demands to withhold repentance from him, so that due punishment might be visited. Therefore, the Holy One, blessed is he,
hardened. So this is an amazing irony. In the story in which God is telling the world that there has to be freedom, you have to be free, he hardens Pharaoh's heart and takes away his free will. How's that fair? Is that fair to take away God's hardened heart and he can't do what he wants to do? The answer is no. That's God is teaching exactly this message of freedom. The message of freedom is you can choose to become the kind of person you want to become. If you choose it's evil, if you choose a path of evil, and you choose not to acknowledge Joseph, the only reason you have your job is because of Joseph. So you enslave Joseph's people by saying, I don't acknowledge where I come from. I don't have a gratitude. I don't accept like honoring your parents. I don't honor where I come from. I basically ignore that. What you're saying is that you're not interested in changing the person. You're just stagnant. You're interested in staying the way you are. You choose your own path in life. So God says, I'm going to let you go on that path. The consequences that you don't pass by. And you're going to live with those consequences. If you don't acknowledge your roots, you're going to basically become a person who's off, doesn't understand what freedom at all. So God says that you don't want to let the Jews free. I'm going to help you do what you really want to do, which is you want to be a moral person, you want to be a good person. You want to be an evil person. So I'm going to help you. Plagues of pressure you to do what you don't want to do. So basically, I'm going to roll that the person goes on. That's what God lets them go on. Basically, Pharaoh was showing you what it is to not be free because there's two choices in life. Having life, you could acknowledge God and your past and pay homage to it, and then you could have freedom to change, or you could say, I can create my own existence. I'm being my own. And God says, okay, you have to deal with the consequences of that. So basically, freedom is about accepting that your life is meant to be. Everything in life is meant to be. And it's from the beginning of time, just like the Exodus music was the beginning of time. Because your life is meaningful. Your life is going in a direction. Meaning something. If you decide that life is meaningless and I don't acknowledge God who created me, I don't acknowledge the people in my life that got me to where I am today, then you're never going to be able to be free. That's why Pharaoh's teaching us the opposite of freedom, because basically, his attitude is what makes people enslaved with their lives, because they don't acknowledge that there's a Leil Shimurim, there's a beginning of time that everything emanates from, and that your life is ordained, preordained, says that solutions are preordained, and that's ironically is what makes you free. Second, so this is Shmuel's approach to consciousness, being slaves in Egypt, and so slaves to Pharaoh and Egypt. So Pharaoh was a person who enslaved himself and was slaves to that mentality. Then God took us out of Egypt, because the process of getting out of Egypt is what enabled us to look at the world completely differently and say, this is we could change different people. Like Abraham became a different person. his name was changed. He was Abraham, and then he became Abraham, because God said he was the type of person who looked at his life as as a growing experience, to realize that everything's preordained because God's involved in my life. And my solutions are embedded in the problems that I have. He was a free person and able to change. But if we're like Pharaoh in Egypt, we can't change. That's why the Haggadah says, last source on the page, that so the second last source, and if the Holy One did not last of Egypt, we and our children we would be safe in Egypt, because basically, since we think that how is it possible over centuries, millennia, people wouldn't be, we would still be slaves in Egypt, because basically we're stuck. If you like Pharaoh, you're stuck, you're never going to change, there's no change. The reason that we were able to change is we learned the lesson of the Exodus. We didn't have the Exodus, we would not learn the lesson of change. You would not learn that you have to accept your circumstances, because you know that your destiny is embedded in the creation of the world. Without the Exodus of Egypt, we wouldn't learn this valuable lesson. We'd still be slaves in Egypt, because nothing would change. Everything would be the same. So Shmuel's ultimate message of we're slaves in Egypt, but then we're free. That contrast between slavery and freedom, physical freedom, the idea that we have the ability to change our freedom and the ability to change our destiny, based on the fact that we believe that everything in our destiny is a solution that's embedded in the problems that we have. The second source of freedom, conscious of freedom, is idol worship to a relation with God. This is what Ram says here. We read this. The idea of freedom of idol worship is the idea of relationship, because idol worship is what Abodah Zarah, which means a strange service. Strange was being strange, so it means these gods are strangers to you. They're not related to this process. Basically, call them other gods. What do you mean other gods? How can you be other gods? So basically means other gods means gods that are other to you. They don't care about you. They don't have a relationship. They're basically, it's a selfish god. He wants your child as a sacrifice, and you want rain from him. So basically, it's an exchange of selfish desire. It's not a relationship. They don't care about the other person. So the amazing thing is, sages say that there's two types of love. There's a love that you are dependent on something, and love is independent. There's two types of love. What's the difference between these two types of love? So the question you can ask is, what do you mean independent? Unconditional. Unconditional love means that if you say love someone, they're nice, they're giving, they're kind, they're good people, they're talented, they're organized. You like all these things about them. So Sadie said that's called conditional love, because basically if someone's in a relationship with a long time with someone, the things they like about them when they met the first time, after a while, you live with someone for a long time, you see they're not so great. So the question is, how do you solve that problem? Because this is everyone has this problem. So only the sages tell us amazing things in Pirkei Avot. Tell us that you have to make your love unconditional. What does unconditional mean? It's the same idea, Leil Shimurim. You're saying that our relationship is embedded in creation. This is who we're supposed to be together. Unless it's an abusive relationship, not a relationship. So if it's a real relationship, and you're frustrated with one another because you expect the person to live up to your list that you had when you first get married, That's tough. No one's gonna live up to that one. That's called the conditional love. That's how you love the person because all those qualities. But if you overlook that and say, you know what, we were meant to be together. This is not just random. This is something that's meant to be from the beginning of time. Then it becomes different animal. So it's like I don't expect to have an expectation you live up to. I live my life to be what I experience 1 minute to the next based on the fact that we were meant to be. This is meant to be. That's exactly what it's a tremendous freedom that gives a person in a relationship to them, because relationships require choice, and you can't choose to be with someone if you don't like them, but you can't choose to be with someone realize that this person was meant to is my person. This is what I'm supposed to be with, and that's a totally different relationship. Changes the whole relationship. It looks at a relationship much more free. So you know, I don't know what a relationship. I'm not defining a relationship. This is what it's supposed to be, and we'll see how it turns out. This is what we learn from this. God, we were once idol worshippers. Once were people who were enslaved to gods of selfishness, gods that were strangers to us and not related to us. They didn't care about us. Then we realized that there's a God who cares. We matter to God. God loves us and cares about us. That's what Abraham discovered. That's why Abraham is the forefather of Passover, because he discovered that that God loves us. God is infinite. Infinite God doesn't have any needs. He doesn't have needs. That means He only created the world to give. That's the relationship that we have with God. It's different from idol worship. That's why Rob's vision of execution is so important. Is the independence that we have came from Shmuel HaGadol, which is physical freedom. The idea that we realize that our lives are embedded in creation. Our problems are embedded in creation. Solutions are embedded in the problems. And therefore, we can change, become different people because of that. And becoming independent individuals. That purpose of becoming independent individuals is in order to choose relationships. You can't force someone to love. God can't force someone to love. But only we come up with God, so we understand we have freedom of choice to choose to love God. We look at the freedom of understanding the message of relationship for this as well, for Shmuel's, for Rao's version as well, which is that our relationships are embedded in creation. Those relationships are meaningful because of the fact that they're meant to be. Understanding that is key to freedom of not only the independence, individual independence, but also using that individual independence, the freedom to choose the relationship we have. That's another aspect of free will that's quite important for the state. So two aspects of freedom, freedom in the state of teachers is freedom to become yourself, freedom to use that self to choose relationships. So the question then becomes, how do we do that? How do we manifest all that, all those steps? You have to ask questions, the contrast, becoming an independent individual, relationship. There's one word in the Seder, the Seder, that encompasses all the stuff. That's why we're able to accomplish so much in one night. It's one idea. The idea is called Da. Da means knowledge. But knowledge means much more than knowledge. Because knowledge, the idea of knowledge is when it says, Adam knew his wife Eve. What does it mean he knew his wife Eve? I mean, he knew her. What does that mean? So it means he had a sexual relationship, he had an intimate relationship with her. Physical and spiritual relationship. So that intimate relationship is called das, called knowledge. So why is it called das? Why is that word used? Das? Das means much more than knowledge. It's not a Greek translation. Das means that, it's like I was giving an example of a seatbelt. Someone goes to driver's education, and they're told to wear a seatbelt. So they get the information ahead. If they get into an accident, that becomes a different rule. It's your experience, you are. It becomes part of you. So that's when you enter the dark zone, and then you're in that. Then you're, because before just information, it's wisdom, it's chacham. But das is I experienced it firsthand. Basically, the idea of das is that is connected to the Seder because it says all the time in the Torah that the reason I did it is in order that you should know that I'm God. You should know that I'm your God. Meaning that I care about you, that you matter. Basically, our idea that we should know means that we should play a part in this. We should choose relationship with God because we choose freedom of our own selves. That choice is an experiential choice, not just information that I could be free. It's like I feel like I could be free. That's important. To see the Seder is to bring out in yourself the idea that you know that you have experienced the fact that we are free people, that we are people who can develop our own individuality and choose relationships. I know that because I experienced it at the Seder, this concept. How do we experience that at the Seder? So the idea that God has a relationship with us is brought out with his relationship with Abraham. Because Abraham is the first forefather of the Jewish people. He was the originator of the Jewish people. And Exodus is the time in which we originate our status as a nation of God. So the relationship with God that Abraham had is what we recreate in the Exodus, which is the origins of the Jewish people as people. And this connection goes through the idea of what God promised Abraham, which is the land of Israel. God promised Abraham the land of Israel in the covenant of the halves. And basically, Abraham asked God, how do I have das, how do I have experiential knowledge that the land of Israel is my heritage? How do I know that? He asked God, audacious question, how do I know that? So it says that God says, you will surely know your daughter Teda. Basically, you will have das because your children will go to Egypt. And this we read this at the Seder. Your children will go to Egypt, they will be enslaved there, and then they'll leave with a lot of property. So how does it answer the question? How do I know the land of Israel is mine? Because you're going to go to Egypt. What's going to do the other? So some people say it's a punishment. God punished Abraham because he didn't have faith in him. He said, I don't believe you're going to give me the land as the Yerusha's inheritance, so I punish you. But I said, this is like the worst answer because basically it takes away from the most important lesson the Torah teaches us. If you totally miss the point, that's not the point. The point is that God says to Abraham, I'm going to bring you down to Egypt. And then he continues and says, I'm going to give you the land of Israel. Because he's saying to you can't know whether right now whether the land of Israel is inherent. What Abraham is asking is, I believe you're going to give me the land of Israel. I don't believe you that's going to be inherited, because maybe my grandchildren are going to be terrible people. They're not going to keep Torah. Maybe they're going to be off the right path, and they're basically going to leave you and me. And how I know that's they're going to be able to choose that path for themselves? How do I know that it's going to be inheritance to me to the point where my children can't lose the land of Israel based on their free will of choosing against God and me? Basically, what the answer to Abraham is amazing. He's saying, the reason you know is because you're going to go going to Egypt. They'll be so far away from you and me that it's not going to be possible for them to come back to Israel based on merit. But they're still going to go back. And once they go back, you're going to see experientially when that happens that the land of Israel is really yours. It's like embedded in creation that this is your land. But there's no one can take that away. Because it only can happen if you have irreligious Jews who have no connection to God, no connection to Abraham, and they still go back to the land of Israel, no matter what. So this is exactly what happened in our day and age. The original Zionists were not religious. They actually wrote a Declaration of Independence that they had debate in the Knesset. Should we write God? And it's amazing. This is the Jewish people, the people of the book. They can't decide whether to write God in the Declaration. And they came with a compromise. They called it the Rock of Israel. Rock of Israel can mean anything. They couldn't write God. The 90s of America. The foundation of America is based on God, and God we trust. God is all over the people of the book. They can't write God. So how can that be? Some rabbis have said this is the biggest desecration of God's name since the beginning of time. I say it's exactly the opposite. This is the biggest sanctification of God's name since the history of the world. What it's saying is, if God made a promise to Abraham, this is your land. This is who you are. This is how I express my love for you, through the physical land of Israel. And the way this happens is that even if spiritually we have no connection to it, it's still going to be yours. And that's the proof. I love you. This is the proof that this is who you are. This is part of you. It's like we say, I forget the Jerusalem, I forget my right hand. So because it's like someone says to you, the land of Israel, you stole the land of Israel. So Rashi says at the beginning of the Torah, well, someone says to you that the UN, he doesn't say the UN, but you have an idea that you want to say, the land of Israel is not yours. So you say to them, God created the world, he gives it to whoever he wants. So I've heard this people argue, make this on. The UN, some Jew gets up and the Bible says that God created the world and he can give it to anyone he wants. So they look like he's insane. What kind of argument is that? I mean, so the Muslim says that his Quran says that it belongs to them, and the Christian says his. So what kind of argument is that? But I believe he's not telling them what to say to the non-Jews. He's telling you what to say to yourself. Saying you have to realize, it's like saying your right hand is it's not yours. Someone says to you, no, your right hand is mine. They're crazy. They're insane. It's like, I get to start saying, what do you mean your right hand? My right hand has been with me since I was born. You can justify it. But the same thing when the Jews say, we've been continuously in the land of Israel since the beginning, since 2,000 years ago. But you're crazy. Why even say that? It's not necessary. God created the world that he gives what he wants to. I mean, this is embedded in creation. As Rashi's the first Rashi in the Torah by the creation of the world. God created the world means it's embedded in creation. This is yours. It's like saying your right hand is not yours. Obviously, it's yours. It's going to be so obvious that it's your land that it's going to come out in history as time develops. You're going to see this is your land of Israel. That's why if you look in the Seder, all we talk about is Dayenu ends up going to Israel. So next year in Jerusalem. This next year, the land of Israel, we're here next year, we're in Israel. That says that the Hisham, that this stood for us, that every generation to try to kill us, and God saved us. Why does God save us? Because he has to fulfill his promise to Abraham that he's going to bring us to the land of Israel, so God can't kill us. That's a justification, amazing. Because God needs to kill us otherwise, but since he promised Abraham, what does that mean? He's saying that, no, because of the promise made to Abraham, you have to be in Israel because I promised to Abraham, because that's your fulfillment of his destiny. It's embedded in creation. You're proving to Abraham, but I told him, Abraham, how do I know it's inheritance? You're going to know with Das, you have experiential knowledge. Because when you go to local history, there's going to be a Holocaust. There's going to be a time when these people are so far away from Israel, it's impossible for them to go back. Then they get outnumbered 10 to 1 in the War of Independence. And they still end up going back to Israel. And all the people born are not religious, there's no connection. Because it's like your right hand, it's who you are. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. The message of the Haggadah saying that the land of Israel is representative of Abraham's relationship with God, and we are living proof of that. We're literally living that experience. We're living that in this our day and age. We have more da'at about this concept of God's relationship with Abraham than any people, any generation in history, because we're on the back wall. The history that has developed. So basically, the point of the Seder is to tell you that this is a living saga. This is who you are. This is not just a theoretical thing you're free from Egypt. The whole point of going to Egypt is to show us that God loves us and it connects to us through Abraham. And that's the line of Israel. I think particularly the fact that we're in exile is proof of this point, because basically what we're saying is, even though we're in exile, even though we're not in the land of Israel, but we're on our way, we're going there. That's why we invite Elijah the prophet, because Elijah the prophet is the one who ushers in the Mashiach, Messiah. All these connections to the land of Israel and Seder are they're intentionally telling us this is who we are. We need to realize that our lives are not just independent of Torah and Abraham, and it's real. It's basically our lives have to be in context. This covenant, the covenant with Abraham, is given by the Israel. This is an expression of God's love for Abraham, and we have to understand that this is our destiny. This is who we are. We can't run away from it. We shall run away from it. We're going to run away from our destiny, just like Pharaoh. The Pharaoh said, "I don't care about where I come from. I don't care about my roots. I don't care about the fact that Joseph gave me who I am. I don't care if there's a God that loves us, a caring, loving God. I'd rather worship idols who indulge in my own self." We realize, no, it's not. It's about the relationship that God has. He loves us and cares about us, but individually and as a nation. And in that context of God, the common Abraham that proves this, is basically our job is to live our lives in that context. We know that how difficult it is to be free and to live our lives, make choices that make a difference in our lives. We don't have context. Context is everything. We live a life that's haphazard, no connecting, no structure in which we live within. We're all over the place. We don't have direction. We're not able to be free. The only way you can be free is if we say, this is not my context. My context is God's promise to Abraham that he's lived the land of Israel, because we are God's nation. We're Abraham's nation. Understand that, then you can live your life and with alacrity and spontaneity and happiness and accomplishment and freedom. Those things can only come about in the context of reality. And the reality is, Satan's trying to tell us, reality of your existence is covenant of God built in you. And that's basically the purpose of the statement. Bring out this idea. The fact that we live in today's day and age, we should realize how amazing it is that nowadays people look at the fact that the non-religious Jews in Israel are the people who hold the state together, who brought us into the state together. They look at that as a sign that it's from the devil. You know, people actually, some Achim in Israel, they say it's from the devil. Two characters is from the devil. And even the less secure people, they say, well, we're not sure if it's Mashiach. We're not sure if it's Messiah yet. Basically, it's undecided because it came out in a secular way. I'm saying this is the main thing. The whole point of the Mashiach is that it's a surprise. It's supposed to be something that we're not supposed to expect. It's like watching a movie. When you watch a movie, you don't want to know the ending before you experience the whole path. The point is that Mashiach comes in the process. Something that comes as we experience it. Life as a pump, that's something that's predictable and there. That's the whole point of the pathway to Mashiach. The whole reason we're free is because we don't have, things are not fine. We're able to make choices because we don't know what's going to happen. But things are open-ended. Things are developing as time goes on. This is what Seder is teaching us. Seder is teaching us that we have this structure of understanding that God promised the land of Israel to Abraham. And we understand that we in exile are in that context. We realize that everything's embedded in creation. It's meant to be. This one idea called Das, one idea called experiential knowledge, teaches us all these ideas that we need to appreciate the fact that we have the ability to become unique individuals through our speech, through our questioning, through our contrast, and that use that individual to choose relational God in the context of this covenant God made with Abraham. That can only occur for our experiential experience through the exile that will bring us to the land of Israel, because that's the context. And having all that in one idea called that, and understanding that this is the context of everything that's said in the Seder, which is we're going to be in exile. God's going to save us from the land because of the fact that we have this covenant with God and Abraham. And the fact that we're going to be this year, we're here next year in Israel because of the covenant of God. And that next year in Jerusalem because of God brought us to the land of Israel from Egypt, because that's what God promises is going to be inherited for All these things is basically the idea that in order to be free, you have to believe the whale should be able to believe that everything's a bending creation. Our lives are bending creation, our relationships are bending creation, and our lives as Jewish people are bending creation. You understand that? Then we really pick out a state or something so relevant to our lives and make our lives more productive, more successful in every fashion. We're able to utilize all these points of the Seder in one night. That will make all the difference in the world. And that's why that's what we're asking. We ask Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, "How do I make this night different?" The Seder is what does it for us. It makes our lives meaningful and powerful, and to make choices that matter.
So that's
the theater in Russia. Any questions on Zoom? No one? Okay.
What are you doing for the theater? Where are you having it?
I'm going to have it in every single member of the family, 30 people.